We present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
The news quiz. We start with a cutting from the BBC News website, read by Zeb Soans.
There are just a few dozen hours until the BBC Election 2015 programme goes on air, and a 60-year-old tool swings into action.
And our thanks to Robert Broadley for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Samira Ahmed. And opposite them on my left, Ellis James and Susan Kalman. Jeremy, who thinks that Chucker can?
Oh, various people in the Labour Party. The Labour Party lost the general election rather badly.
Oh, hang on, 2 points. That's right.
And are now looking for someone to lead them to defeat in 2020. And some people think it should be somebody more like Tony Blair, because Tony Blair had a way of connecting with people, especially in Iraq. He could get right into their homes and silence any doubts they might have about his sanity. And, of course, David Miliband ruled himself out by having a massive flounce and poncing off to America when he lost legitimately to his younger brother. And I suppose that the Milibandites are kind of wanting there to be a sort of supply leader, temporarily, who will lose in 2020, and then will be the moment. In the meantime, because he hasn't got a seat anymore, David, because the wicked younger brother, Ed, wickedly framed him as a horse thief, and he had to run away to sea. And he will be smuggled back into the country in a rowing boat disguised as a shepherdess. And then he will hide in an oak tree burning a spider. And so the people who have declared so far: Yvette Cooper, who gets to stay later at work, now she's got a house husband at home. Mary Cray just declared, I think she's international development, she's another Blairite. And Andy Burnham, who's a Scouser, and they think he might be good because he's Norden, and people will think that's more like the Labour Party ought to be, more like Andy Burnham.
But let's face it, you're really happy, aren't you, when you're miserable like this? A period in the wilderness, just one gets the feeling it's when the left is often happiest.
Because people say, oh yeah, you get lots of material, and I think people sort of think, yeah, that's what we care about, comedians on the left. Never mind the faces of the poor being ground into the dirt. Satire is what feeds us.
Ed Miliband, let's just spare a thought. Aww. Dancing round his stone of promises to the Venga Boys in Ibiza.
He was surrounded by people who wanted him to lose. And I mean, that huge stone that they made in the tablet of stone, you think, as though he doesn't look Jewish enough. Make him stand. Let's garner the rest of the anti-Semitic vote in the country against Labour Party.
Now, that's what I want to know.
It's in a garage somewhere.
Is it? Was he going to put it? He was going to put it in the Rose Garden at number 10, where Clegg's career is buried.
I think Cameron ought to resign. All the other party leaders have resigned. It's only fair. Sandy's resigned. Everyone's resigned. Jim Murphy hasn't resigned.
No, he hasn't. In some ways, I admire someone who has lost 50-odd seats in Parliament but goes, yeah, I'm not going anywhere, actually, thanks for it. I'm quite happy here. And it's just not answering any questions about it at all.
I just realised is all those jobs I got sacked from, I could have just stayed.
Yeah. That's the way to do it. In the next series of the news quiz, Sandy will still be here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just sitting behind whoever's hosting it, just staring.
I got sacked from Transco when I had a real job, the gas pipe people, for slouching.
Surely gas pipes are quite low. Slouching is part of the job,
My line manager's friend found me in the toilet, and I was just leaning my face against the window going, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God. And then he came in, and he looked at me, and I said, do you not do this after you've gone to the toilet as well? And then I walked back into the office, and this bloke was going to my boss. He was just leaning against the mirror in the toilet going, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God, and then I got sacked.
You know, they didn't sack Nick Clegg for that, though, did they?
The Labour Party has announced it will wait until the autumn to select a new party leader after abandoning attempts to hold a speedy contest. Modernisers want to see the party move back to the centre, which should be easy since the SNP has stopped Labour getting anywhere north of Carlisle. Among those currently in the race are Yvette Cooper, Andy Burnham and Liz Kendall, hotly followed by Dick Dastardly and Penelope Pitstop. 2 points to Jeremy. Tell us, who's been disrupting the order south of the border?
Well, it was the first day at work for 56 SNP MPs, and they ruffled some feathers. So they had their induction, and they behaved like a stag do. It's absolutely brilliant. Well, my favourite one is that Roger Mullin, when they were shown around the House of Commons, had a selfie taken on the dispatch box pretending to be David Cameron, which is exactly what anyone else would do. Look at that, take it now! Exactly. And they got told off.
They were cross about that, weren't they?
They were very...
apparently it's impolite to be photographed at the dispatch box.
Yes.
Wait till they find out he's drawn a willy on it.
And also they were told, oh, you're not meant to clap. You're meant to shout, hear, hear, if you agree with something, and no, if you disagree, and if you're Michael Heseltine, you're allowed to swing the mace around your head if you think there are communists. So when they got told that you're not allowed to clap, a couple of them started clapping. And then they all joined in and clapped for ages. It's like a mad school trip. But they just don't care about any of the sort of the protocols, which I find very refreshing. And also, Mary Black, obviously, is the youngest MP since, is it 1667? And she's 20 years of age. And it's that interesting thing where, in years to come, people are going to say, oh, what did you do with your gap year?
I looked it up, actually. The youngest ever MP was Christopher Monk, who was 13 and a half when elected in 1667. Obviously, he's no longer around. He's now a Tory peer, but...
I just wanted to set the record straight on one thing, if I may, about the pre-election coverage. There was a lot of coverage about the SNP, and one particular newspaper dubbed Nicola Sturgeon the most dangerous woman in Scotland. Now, I was at university with Nicola Sturgeon, and I can quite happily say to everyone, she is not the most dangerous woman in Scotland. It's Lulu, as we all know. It's Lulu. But I find it incredibly refreshing that they are going to Westminster and doing what they're there to do, which is mix things up, to be honest with you. And the Daily Mail said that Nicola Sturgeon was the most dangerous enemy he'd ever faced. Now, if that's true, if facing a woman who's educated with an opinion is the most frightening thing he comes across, he shouldn't be the Prime Minister, as far as I'm concerned.
But also, she turned up at Parliament on a horse carrying a sword. I think that was terrifying.
It's a really interesting thing. The most challenging thing, I think, for the political establishment is the fact that people trust and believe a positive message that someone has put forward. And that is terrifying for people. That these MPs have come down. Not everybody in Scotland voted for them, but people believe that they're going to mix things up. Now, I cannot wait for the first Prime Minister's questions to see what happens. There's 56 of them. I'm delighted they've gone in. Why shouldn't you clap in the House of Commons? Who's told you you can't do that? Clap away. Go on for it. There we go.
Also, I performed in front of big groups of Scottish people at the Edinburgh Festival, and if the worst thing they're doing is clapping, I would be absolutely thrilled with that.
They're calling, some people are already calling Nicola Sturgeon the Iron Lady, which is clearly offensive. She's clearly the Iron Brew Lady. Did you see the tweets that Mary Black tweeted when she was a teenager?
Yes.
They were fantastic. Woke up beside half a can of Tennent's and a full pizza and more money than I came out with. I call that a success. I'm not saying it's a well-funded plan to lower the deficit, but...
But
if we're talking about people in Parliament who represent what actually happens every day, those people are more representative than Sir Hujima Watsa Falango Face will ever be.
Yeah, but what they're showing online and in the papers is this MP, this 20-year-old MP, and they showed pictures of her with a chip butty, didn't they? Pictures. You think, oh, honestly, these vacuous young women Instagramming pictures of their food, ousting senior shadow ministers, making political history and changing the world. What next?
And also, she tweeted a lot about being drunk underage when she was 15, and so the Daily Mail called her a colourful character. and she said, well, you know, a lot of teenagers get drunk when they're 15. And I thought to myself, of course. But if you'd known you were going to be an MP at 15, you would have been the weirdest 15-year-old.
You'd have been Ed Miliband.
Well, yes.
The SNP's new intake of 56 MPs have arrived at Westminster for the first time since the party's huge success in the general election, with UKIP shaking their heads about a bunch of foreigners moving here and putting a lot of English people out of work. The papers called it a Scottish invasion, whereas a more factual headline might be citizens travel to another part of the country. The SNP flew down together in a plane while the Lib Dems arrived on four tandems. 2 points to Ellis. Samira, who has restocked their cabinet in matching shades of blue?
Well, it's not a coalition, so much to his delight, David Cameron can choose a cabinet, and he's decided to choose, you know, lots of people who he can, might genuinely disagree with him, rather than just Liberal Democrats. And he's got... So the big moves have been kind of Greg Hands, the Chief Secretary, to the Treasury. Boris, quite interestingly, is a minister, is not a minister, but will attend special separate meetings of a political cabinet, which is like made up a new system. And the one that I'm quite interested in is Culture Secretary. So the former Culture Secretary, Sajid Javid, has been promoted to business. And what we all noticed, anyone who works in arts journalism, is when he got appointed to Culture, we were all asking for interviews and what would you like to talk about, and talk about Star Trek if you like, and even that didn't kind of make him come on. But his first public announcement was about mobile phone reception, and has never given an interview to a lot of arts programmes. And yet, the day of the announcement, he was straight out there with a speech. I think it shows you when you're ready to go. So John Whittingdale, who is the new Culture Secretary, is that interesting thing. He's a Culture Secretary who actually knows about culture. So apparently, the last concert he went to was Deep Purple. He claims to have been a punk, and he loves classical music and the ballet, so that's kind of quite a broad range. But the main thing, obviously, people know is that he has described the BBC licence fee as a poll tax. But the feeling is that he wants the BBC not to be making stuff that people want to watch necessarily, but stuff that's good for you. And that's, you know, sort of... Well, he specified things like religion, children.
If they stop making Poll Dark, my mum will lose her mind. She lives for that man taking his top off on a Sunday night.
That does count as historical culture, though.
If you put it in a historical context, you can just have men taking their tops off.
Yeah. It's also agricultural because he's scything.
Is that what they're calling it now?
I had hoped that if the Tories got a majority, they wouldn't feel the need to talk about their knowledge of contemporary music, because it is so tedious and annoying. And you get Cameron going on about the bands he likes, and you think, oh, just shut up. You think Van Morrison is poor people's Ocado.
Do you know he's just the... Before he was a shadow minister, David Cameron was running the publicity for the relaunch of the Tory party. And one of the big innovations was going to get people to see the real personalities of all the Tory shadow cabinet. And so he'd made them shoot all these films where they had to say things like, this is Theresa May, and I've never forgotten it. It's like, my favourite album is Fields of Gold by Sting. One day I will interview Theresa May, and I'm going to bring it up.
Yeah. Well, David Cameron's favourite band is Aston Villa, obviously. They're very excited about this blue-collar conservatism because they've got some token proles in that he's invited in just to do some of the odd jobs around Downing Street. But there's this, and so Labour's got all worried about this thing about aspiring. We fail to reach out to the working class Tories, the aspiring people. And if you look at the demographics of the election, the bulk of Tory support is the over 65s. And what exactly they are aspiring to, I'm not really sure.
The way he talked about the blue-collar cabinet was interesting because he's clearly very pleased. Let's face it, this was quite unexpected. People may call this the blue-collar cabinet. I don't think anyone had before that. People may call this the blue-collar cabinet. I mean, people may call me the new Angelina Jolie, but it doesn't actually make it true.
Aren't you waiting for that moment when Martine McCutcheon comes in as the tea lady and he falls in love with her and everything changes?
No, I want Boris Johnson to ask the new Equalities Minister, oh, fetch me a cup of tea, darling.
And I like the fact that Boris is allowed to attend meetings but he doesn't have a post. I like the idea of, I don't know if anyone else did this at Christmas time, there was a kids' table that was slightly further away from the adults' table. I like the idea of Boris Johnson just sitting in the corner at the kids' table, watching the cabinet just plotting, you know, with a funny hat on, and some crayons just drawing what he's going to do to society.
Did you bring that up, Susan, because you're still not allowed at the grand table? Okay, we still haven't mentioned my favourite person in the cabinet. Yeah. Michael Gove, Justice Secretary and Lord Chancellor. Having alienated the entire educational establishment, he's now going to turn his attention to the law. And I just love the idea of, I want to see how his confrontational style plays out with the more upbeat, freewheeling and chilled British judiciary. I think it's...
I don't think
every time I look at him, he's like an onion, Michael Gove. He is. The more you peel peel off each intricate layer of skin, the more you find yourself sobbing on the kitchen floor.
It'll probably have a free courts programme where local people can set up their own courts. Vigilantes is an ugly word, but it'll be local people who are concerned about justice and are unhappy with the justice system in their own area.
Yes.
You could call it academies or free courts or lynch mobs, you could call it lynch mobs.
I like the fact that the new Scotland Secretary is David Mundell, who's clearly the best choice out of the one Conservative Scottish MP.
But how bad would you have felt as David Mundell if you hadn't got that job? Sitting there waiting for the phone call, I hope it's me, I hope it's me.
That's pretty much what they've done with all the other seats, is they've chosen the least appropriate person. Like, the agricultural minister is a locust.
You're absolutely right. If there was a minister for shelves that are too high, it would have been me.
Yeah.
William Hague's not an MP anymore. That's a loss to all impressionists. You do a rather good William Hague, don't you?
I used to do quite a good William Hague. On occasion, this country faces no existential threat.
And that's how Jeremy actually speaks without his medication.
Yeah, Zeb, have you met Haig when you've done, like, Today Bottom? Have you met Haig?
He's been in.
Has he?
Has he? I didn't know. David Cameron has completed his post-election cabinet reshuffle, the first all-Conservative cabinet since 1997. It includes more women than any previous Conservative government, and also Boris Johnson. The two are not necessarily connected. Boris was not given an actual job, but will be allowed into the cabinet as long as he doesn't get on the furniture. Cameron has been praised for bringing a lot of female faces to ministerial offices, although half of those are just portraits of Margaret Thatcher. 2 points to Samira. At the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Samira have got 4 points, but so too have Ellis and Susan. We start round two with a headline from Reuters.
Robotic glove could help stroke survivors.
Well, thanks to Richard Mills for sending us that. Ellis, who's logging on and on and on and on?
Ah, right. Well, it was in the press a lot this week that apparently young people spend a day a week online.
Wow.
And I read that and I thought to myself, who are these incredible go-getters? I just couldn't believe it. A day, I am permanently glued to the internet. It reminded me that there's always those news stories, isn't there, where it says things like, if the average person gets to 70, they will spend 9 years in the kitchen, they'll spend 3 years on the toilet. I've spent 3 years on the toilet on my phone. I mean, I don't know what I was doing on the toilet before I had a smartphone. I mean, what on earth was I thinking about? I can't have been in my own head with my own thoughts, can I, surely?
But it's weird, because we keep checking our phones, despite the fact that we have alarms that tell us if somebody's contacted us. It's like continuously opening the front door on the off chance somebody...
Everyone does everything, because if you try to sort of, like, get hold of anything, like British Gas or the railways, it directs you to book online. You try and book a hotel. And I just think it's a shame, because everything is just over-researched. I mean, when you wanted to go on holiday, you'd sort of go to a travel agent in the high street, and you'd say, I'd like to go somewhere, please. And they'd say, have you thought about abroad? You'd say, I don't know, what's that like? Because everyone's very friendly. You say, okay, I'll go abroad then. And they'd say, you're going to Sorrento. Am I? Yes, you're going to Sorrento. You'll fly to Naples, you'll get this taxi to this hotel, and you never questioned any of this. You just went along with it, and you were grateful. Whereas now, you spend a whole year researching online, and you're just about to agree. Oh, no, someone on TripAdvisor's criticised the soap dish. Oh, we're back to square one. People are dating online. Oh, don't. I know people are like 5 nights a week.
I met my wife internet dating.
No.
Did you?
Didn't you put an advert in the paper saying if you like
it was a personal ad.
Why couldn't you have just got some grit in your eye on a train station with Rachmaninoff in the background?
Well, it may surprise you, Jeremy, but they weren't flocking round me. So I decided to put an advert in, and I lied. I said I was 5'7". I said I liked poetry and fine wine, And luckily, my wife was so drunk when she read it, she phoned me, and that's how we met. Through, what? I know, it's so romantic, isn't it?
Before you got into online dating, what was your technique for sort of pulling?
Well, I would go to a bar and sit in a black polo neck reading an intellectual book, and then I'd go home.
Yeah. I would go to the same nightclub in Cardiff, and I would stand. And then I would go home.
I think we spend more time on the internet because cats have really upped their game. I do. They've got a lot funnier in the last 15 years.
But the thing is, being self-employed, I calculated for the show, I spent 3 days of the past 7 in total online. And that's because I've got no one to speak to. The internet's my friend. And the other day, someone phoned up my landline. That was frightening.
Yeah.
The landline. I knew my mum wasn't around, so I knew it wasn't her. And someone said, oh, are you interested in a conservatory? And I talked to them for about half. I live in a flat. I can't have it.
Are you sure you didn't mishear? And it was somebody from the Scottish Conservatives trying to find anybody who's interested. I think the internet has improved my life. I now Skype my children all the time. I mean, they live at home, but I can mute them. It's...
don't you? I mean, I text my children, or they text me from upstairs to tell me stuff.
What I love is when my mum texts me, she always signs off mum. Like, anyone else is going to be asking me the questions that that woman is asking me. Have you got a proper job yet? Mum.
The emergence of tablets and smartphones means people are spending twice as long online as a decade ago, according to a poll by Ofcom, with the average time spent online now nearly one full day a week. Today, we spend more time glued to our tablets and phones than ever. But on a positive note, we spend less time dying of smallpox and wearing leg warmers. So. Progress isn't all bad. 2 points to Ellis. Susan, what's so bad about cities breaking out in hives?
It's really the biggest story of the week, I think, which has been sadly overlooked by a lot of the newspapers, and that is that novice middle-class beekeepers are causing an increase in swarms in city centres. I think, I know some of you didn't know about it, but I'm just warning you. Middle-class people, and the papers were quite specific that they were middle-class people, who want to save bees, are keeping bees, but don't quite understand how to control the bees. And what happens is bees swarm when they're looking for a new home. And so in city centres, like in Chichester, the police had to put a cordon up to prevent the public from encountering the swarm of bees.
Because cordons are famously impossible to fly over.
Exactly. I just want to reassure everyone for this particular reason. I was watching BBC Breakfast Time, and Bill Turnbull, who I believe is a beekeeper, and Bill Turnbull said quite specifically that you could walk into a swarm of bees and not be harmed unless you bumped into one of them. So, if you encounter a swarm of bees, which is possible given middle-class people's penchant for keeping bees, just be careful not to bump into one of them. It'll be like The Matrix. If you've seen The Matrix, just keep moving, just keep moving, just keep moving. The only time they will sting you is if you bump into them, because they notoriously hate rude people.
In every newspaper I read this story, they all use the same sentence. The latest middle-class fad of beekeeping. I thought, fad? I've only just bought a cafetiere. I can't keep her, but... I didn't realise I had to start keeping bees.
The real thing is that the domestic beekeeping has grown because people are worried about bees dying out. It's the same reason my garden has a little tiny Lib Dem shed now.
People give up their spare rooms to bees on Airbnb.
I like honey, but if I've got to go to the trouble of keeping bees, I'm going to switch to lemon curd. It is simply not worth the trouble.
I once got quite severely injured saving a bee because I was in the stairwell of my flat and there was a bee caught in a cobweb. And I thought, I have to save that bee. Now, I'm not a hero. I don't want anyone to... I went and I got a stepladder and I stood in the hall and I got a spoon and gently removed the bee from the cobweb and then gave it sugar water because that's what you're meant to do to revive the bee. So I was reviving the bee and I fell off the ladder. But the bee was fine. And I felt amazing because that bee flew away, probably to swarm, But I felt like I'd really done something. Now, I don't have a hive, but it's just one bee at a time.
One day, you'll be in a coliseum and the Romans will set the bees out to attack you because you're a Christian. And that bee, that's life you saved, will buzz up to you and say, "Hello, Susan. You saved my life. I won't sting you." And they will be glad.
I was walking down the street the other day and I had a red jacket on and a bee settled on my shoulder. And we just walked along the street together. And then it flew up, probably the same bee. And it flew off and I just went, "Cheerio." And it was one of the nicest afternoons ever, just walking along the road with a bee.
Have you ever thought about just getting a job, you know? Just... Middle-class urban beekeepers have been blamed for a recent increase in city centre swarms. Swarming often happens when a new queen bee is born and some of the hive leave to set up a new home. The same thing happens with photographers and Kardashians. When questioned by the Daily Telegraph, Geraldine Wright, Professor of Insect Neuroethology at the University of Newcastle, said, "Why are you calling me? Nobody's ever asked me about my job before." Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they would like to share?
Sandy, this was sent in by Stephen Burstyn of Jewish London Walking Tours, and it's a review of one of his tours on TripAdvisor. It says, "Excellent tour of Willesden Jewish Cemetery. Fascinating morning. Stephen really brought it to life."
This is from L.D. McManus in Ceredigion, from the local parish magazine, the Dewi Sant, Llandeiniol, Llanrustid and Llansanffraid group of churches. I mean, that is patronising, but... Irving Benson and Jessie Carter were married last Saturday in the church, and so ends a friendship that began in their school days.
Let's take a look at the final score. Ellis and Susan have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Jeremy and Samira with 13. Before we leave you, here's a headline from the Sydney Morning Herald, sent in by Kate Simpkins.
Australian sex party deregistered due to lack of members.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Harney, Samira Ahmed, Ellis James and Susan Carmen. In the chair was Sandy Tonsvik, and the news was read by me, Zeb Soames. The chair script was written by Andy Walton, James Buck and John Hunter, with additional material by Kieran Nicholson, Gandhi Hutchinson-Crouch and Max Davis. The producer was Lindsay Fenner, and it was a BBC Radio comedy production.